I hear a lot of times, is heaven and hell real? I think a lot of people truly question that. I think they believe heaven's real, and they think hell is a myth. And it's amazing to me how we move, how our society, the world that we live in, moves. What we see today, 50 years ago, you would not have dreamed possible. This week, Wilma and I were in taking care of my mom, and we took some time to go to the Holocaust Museum. And one of the questions you got to ask is, how did this happen? And so when you look at, okay, how do these kinds of things happen? How do they come about? How do these atrocities? You know, we also went to the Lincoln Memorial, or Jefferson Memorial, excuse me. And I think both of us have been to all the other memorials, and they're all about wars. And of course, we have sort of a memorial around 9/11. We didn't even know we were at war. And I think that's a lot in what we're dealing with in the church today. I think there's a lot of people that don't realize the depth with which the war is that we're truly engaged. And so when we look at, so I want to look at just a couple things today, and that is, what pictures do we have of heaven? Where is the battle coming from? You know, is it going to be external? Is it going to be internal? We have so many warnings. So if you look at Satan, because that's who we're fighting. I mean, that is the battle. What do we have in terms of a real picture? Now, you know, I've read Revelation, and we're talking about a future state, and it's somewhat difficult. But we have some true pictures of Satan's role or whatever. If you look at Job 1, starting in 6, we find, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves to the Lord. And Satan also came among them." So here we have a picture, a glimpse of heaven. We have basically the angels give an account to God, and Satan's with them. Now we know that nothing that Satan, the only things that he can do to us are allowed by God. And if you read on in Job, you know, we all know the story. But do you realize the power that he had? The power that he does have? And so you look at, does he attack us from our frontal account? If you go back to Genesis 3. What are the first things we hear? "And he said to the woman, Indeed, has God said, you shall not eat from any fruit in the garden?" So he's asking a question, and he's putting a slight twist on it. He's making it sound like God is unjust. Did he really say that? Well, the woman obviously says, no, that's not what he said. But he starts putting those seeds of doubt. His tricks back then are the same with the tricks he has today. He poses questions, he puts doubt. Like I say, the battles that we have today are not truly among men. They're with princely powers that are far greater than us, and we have to depend on God to fight that battle. Okay. So the first words there, like I say, that was, to me, kind of indicative of how Satan deals with us today. And so when we look at what is happening to the churches today, I think in a lot of cases, the ones that are truly biblical or adhere to biblical principle, they're ostracized. They're truly labeled as legalistic. They're stringent. You know, they're unloving. They don't really care about you. And it's amazing to me how it comes about that the very opposite is what's true. You know, when you look at, and I don't want to label it liberal or conservative or whatever, but you look at the seeds of untruth are planted. And the battle that we're facing is there every day. And I think that the thing that's even scarier is that when you look at the battles within the church now, it's not out. It's not an external battle. You look, Satan and his the people that support Satan and his one-third angels, you know, have infiltrated the churches. I think when you I got to ask a question. Why does God give us so many warnings about false teachers? I mean, we wouldn't listen to people that, would we? It's because they just twist that truth a little bit and they start slow and they build. I think he brings that to a point. If you look in Matthew, Matthew 13, beginning in 31. It's one we all know. It's very short. And of course, it's the parable of the mustard seed. He presented another parable to them, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field. And this is smaller than all the other seeds, but when grown, when full grown, it is larger than the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and nest in its branches." What does that mean? You know, for years, I guess maybe it's a fault that I have being an engineer. But, you know, it said it was a parable. But I tried to put things in literal. Mustard seed isn't the small seed. You know, how can this be true? And so I think when you step back and you look at, okay, what are the symbols here? I mean, when you look at and you pick that verse apart, excuse me a second here. Talk about who's the sower. And we obviously look at that as being Jesus or us. We have a responsibility to sow the seed, to spread the word. Okay. And of course, we're already given the next question is, what's the seed? Isn't it the word of God? When we talk about the shrub, and I don't remember, I'm a little bit confused as far as, because this same verse is in Mark, and one of them refers to it as a shrub. But we talk about, you know, when a plant's small, or it's a shrub. To me, it dawned on me that what he's talking about is a young church. And of course, that church grows. And it becomes to the size of a tree. And so you look at that, that's a mature church. And you look at all the different churches and branches that we have today, and you look at hypocrisy, you look at the things that are being taught, and it makes you wonder. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story, and I may have told this story before, but there were some young kids that came to their dad, and they wanted to go to the movie. All their friends were going to this movie. And they said, "Yeah, Dad, it does have a couple bad things in it, but it's really not that bad. I mean, it's really a pretty good movie. Plus, all of our friends are going to it, and their parents are letting go." So Dad's smart. He says, "I'll tell you what." He says, "I need time to think about this. We'll discuss this tomorrow night." So the next night rolls around. And they're sitting at the kitchen table, And he's cooked them a chocolate cake. And so he said, we wanted to discuss this movie. And he says, now, before you eat this cake, I want you to know, I put a little dog poop in it. Not very much, but just a little. And of course, none of the kids touched it, and they certainly got the message. And so the question to our church, too, is, how much, if any, variance to God's word do we allow? How rigidly do we stick to the principles of the Bible? And I challenge this because I think that any time we're not careful, or we're not diligent about what we teach, and not only what we teach, because frankly, the way we teach is not by what we say per se, it is by how we act out in public. It is people watching us. It's how we act. You know, do we act with integrity? And so, the point that I'm trying to make is we need to be really diligent. That too many churches around have kind of given up and they allow things that now that we absolutely should not allow. And the point being, and I don't mean to be dogmatic about this, you know, what the way I've interpreted this. I think it makes sense and I think it's right. But I don't, if people have, you know, some other version as far as what the birds symbolize. And that's why I had Dave read, you know, Ezekiel, because it talks about all the birds, you know, and what happens, you know, in nesting in the trees, you know, and what happens after the devastation and they go to death. And of course, if we're not diligent about the birds that nest in our tree, they'll destroy everything that we're going about. So I think that, you know, the point is, one, we're in a battle. He's very, very devious. He makes really small, simple changes at first. And if we're not diligent about recognizing that it is false, that we can alter our behavior and yield to it such that we become like them. When you look at in Revelation, there's really only two churches that we talk about in terms of the end times that we want to emulate. And so I think it's important that we stick to the principles of the Bible. That being said, in terms of the invitation tonight, I think it's a story I told a couple of people, but during wartime, the military has adopted procedures so they can save the most lives. And in triage, they have a system where when the wounded soldiers come in, the doctors make a fairly rapid evaluation as to what their chances of survival are. And so if the chances are really fairly good, they put a green tag on, and which means that they can wait. And if they put a blue tag on, it means they need an immediate care, or they're going to die. Or a red tag is indicative that they're just not going to make it. That there's nothing they can do surgically to save them. And so typically what happens is when they go into the, I don't want to say tent because I don't know, I think that's from some TV shows that we see too much of. But basically that they take what information they can and they give them morphine or whatever to make them as comfortable as they can, but they've basically given up on them. And so my belief is this is a true story, and it occurred during the first Iraqi war. And event took place where this soldier came in, red tag on his stove. Nurse is getting ready to give him the shot of morphine, and the young man looks at her, and he says, "Please get a message to my wife that I love her." Well, it really affected her, and so she changed his tag from red to blue. So they whisked him off to surgery. She didn't get a chance to change the paperwork or the doctor's orders. He was operated on. They whisked him away in a plane to, you know, a hospital that had all the facilities. And she never did hear what happened to him. She never did know. Many months later, it was getting close to the end of her tour. An inspector general came to that camp. And he had the orders. And it happened to be these ones. And she had completely forgotten about the task or the time. And he said, this is, you know, somebody that was red tagged and is currently with his family. I'd like to know how that happened. Who had the audacity to change the doctor's orders? And this nurse could not frankly remember at first, and then she got to thinking, and she thought, that must have been me. And she stood up, and she said, you know, I think I'm the one that did that. But he literally leaped over some of the soldiers in the lines, and he got down on his hands and knees. He said, that was my son. And the only reason he's with his family is because he did that. Now, for those of you that are not saved, don't realize it, but Jesus is probably the best tag changer that you ever knew. If you're not saved, you have a red tag. And he can change that color to blue or to green.